morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Batte in Washington. Today is Monday, December 13, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberian Senator Prince Johnson denies reasons for U.S. sanctions.
For the embassy or the Treasury Department to say I receive money from ministries to provide intelligence for government, it is shocking because I am not the intelligence arm of the government of Liberia.
Friends of Angola welcome U.S. sanctions on the daughter of former President Dos Santos. Kenyans celebrated Jamhuri Day yesterday, Sunday. We'll talk with the new deputy special representative in the U.N. mission in South Sudan. And the U.N. condemns the forced expulsion of asylum seekers and migrants from Libya.
Those expelled have often already survived a range of other serious human rights violations and abuses in Libya at the hands of both state and non-state actors, including arbitrary detention, enforced disappearance, trafficking, sexual violence, torture, and ill treatment.
And a pioneering Uganda veterinarian received the UN Champion of the Earth for Science and Innovation Award. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Senator Prince Johnson of Liberia is denied that he sold votes in multiple Liberian elections in exchange for money. Johnson also denies he has been receiving a salary from the government of Liberia as a salaried intelligence source without providing any form of intelligence to the Liberian government. Johnson was responding to sanctions imposed on him last Thursday by the U.S. government for alleged involvement in a pay-for-play funding program with the Liberian government that the U.S. says involves millions of dollars. Johnson says the U.S. Treasury Department provided no evidence to support its claims. With regards to vote selling, Johnson said he signed a Memorandum of Understanding, MOU, with former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and later with candidate George Weah for him to support Weah's candidacy, and in return, Weah as president will bring development to Johnson's home county of Nimba. Johnson says this is not pay for play, but Democratic dividend.
I read about this on the U.S. Embassy website. What I read, there are no specifics. Number one, it says, I receive money from ministries of government to provide intelligence. And you know, Jill Butler, I am not an intelligence arm of government. I am not responsible for the provision of intelligence to the government. So, for the embassy or the Treasury Department to say I receive money from ministries to provide intelligence for government. It is shocking.
But you serve on the Intelligence Committee of the Liberian Senate, is that correct?
Yeah, but James, the Intelligence Committee of the Liberian Senate does not receive finance. The Liberian Senate does not provide finance for that committee. It's just a committee that has oversight. It does not receive any budgetary allocation from anybody to carry out its functions.
Let me ask you, Senator, because one of the other issues in the sanctions is that you have been selling votes in numerous Liberian presidential elections. Have you?
No, James Butte, it is laughable. Today, while preaching, I was able to show, to exhibit to the congregation, a copy of the MOU that President Weah and I signed. We put in the MOU jobs for my citizens, for my party people, in my country, scholarship, roads, electricity, and so forth. So all the while we put in the MOU, President Weah is doing them now. Together, NEMA is doing road construction. Together, NEMA is doing electricity. So there is no way somebody can sell votes. I must tell you this, Jimmy. Politics is interest. I ran for president. 2017, I did not win. Before I could support Mr. Weah, we entered into an MOU. The man who drafted the MOU is Councillor Gibson, who is currently Minister of Labor. And from my side, Minister Zio Mensah was also a lawyer. I joined them to draft the agreement, which happened. So nobody can sell votes. What you do is you enter into agreement, look, I'm going to support you. But for my support, these are the dividends I need. Jobs for my people. Remember my party, I need electricity, I need, you know, all of the incentives that will benefit my people. And all that was enshrined in a document we call MOU between the CDC and the MDR. I have the copy.
But, Senator, isn't that MOU pay-to-play? Can it be equated to pay-to-play?
Well, that's a strange language. I just heard pay-to-play. Pay-to-play what? If I run for president and I didn't win, I have the right to support who I want to support. I have the right to receive democratic dividends for my people.
You have repeatedly referred to yourself as a kingmaker, and this comes out every time there's an election. What exactly did you mean when you say you are a kingmaker?
I have never referred to myself as a kingmaker. I supported Madam Celine, she won. I supported George Weah, he won. Madam Celine won twice with my support. The people of my country, Jimmy, they love me so much, and wherever I turn, they give me maximum support for the presidency when I was running. When I didn't make it, I said to them, let's support Madam Celine. And they did. In this country, I am referred to my people as a reliance. Somebody they rely on, somebody they depend on, somebody they trust. So when I say, let's support George Weah, they did. Doesn't mean I'm selling votes. What the evidence?
Senator Johnson, thank you so much for talking with us.
It's always my happiness to talk with you. God bless you.
That was Senator Prince Y. Johnson of Liberia speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. The group Friends of Angola is welcoming U.S. State Department sanctions on Isabel dos Santos, the billionaire daughter of former Angolan President José Eduardo dos Santos, for her involvement in significant corruption by misappropriating public funds for her personal benefit. The U.S. also imposed sanctions on Angolan military general Leopoldino Fragoso do Nascimento, popularly known as General Dino, for corruption. Florindo Chivukute is executive director of Friends of Angola.
The U.S. has imposed sanctions on two Angola former senior government officials, that's General Leopoldino Fragoso do Nascimento, and then the second General Manuel Elder Vieche Jr. So those two, the sanctions was imposed by the Treasurer under the Executive Order 13818, which builds upon and implements the Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act, and basically targets perpetrators of corruption and serious human rights abuses. And then in addition to that, there was also a sanction imposed to former Angolan president, which is Isabel dos Santos. But this one was imposed by the Department of State, and so it is related to visa restriction. So the Department of State sanctioned not just Mrs. Isabel dos Santos, which is the richest woman in Africa. She's well known also as a businesswoman, but mainly because of her relation as a daughter of former President dos Santos ruling Angola for 30-plus years. So basically, Mrs. Isabel dos Santos and her immediate family cannot enter the U.S., as well as General Manuel Elder Vieira Dias, also known as Acopelipa, and then General Leopoldino Fragoso do Nascimento.
You were saying earlier that your organization played a part in bringing about these sanctions. What was the role of your organization?
So Friends of Angola has led a coalition of organizations and individuals to submit a sanctions to the Treasurer about Magnitsky Act, Human Rights Accountability Act. And that happened almost 2 years ago. So we targeted a number of individuals, Angolan government officials, who we know through data that we had from reputable newspaper, including ICIJ, through the Luanda Leaks and other news outlets, as well as our partners who we have done research. So we found that those individuals have played an important role in really sucking the public funds for their own benefit. So we submitted this application almost 2 years ago, and that was during President Trump administration. And so we were hoping, because there was a lot of evidence, so we're hoping that this new administration, the Biden administration, would consider on International Anti-Corruption Day, which happened on Thursday, I believe, December 9th.
Florindo Chivukute is the executive director of Friends of Angola. You are speaking with us from the Angolan capital, Luanda. The United Nations Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights is condemning the forced expulsion of asylum seekers and migrants by Libyan authorities, warning of the risks that many face when returned to the homes that they fled to escape persecution. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Two large groups of Sudanese are among those forcibly deported from Libya over the past month. United Nations monitors say most have been summarily expelled from the Ganfuda and Al-Kufr detention centers. Both centers are controlled by the Interior Ministry's Department for Combating Illegal Migration. The monitors say the Sudanese apparently have been transported across the Sahara Desert to the Libya-Sudan border and dumped there. The UN Human Rights Office says Libya's expulsion of the Sudanese asylum seekers and migrants without due process and procedural guarantees violates international human rights and refugee law. UN spokesman Rupert Colville says the group of 18 Sudanese expelled Monday reportedly were arrested, detained, and arbitrarily expelled. He says no hearing was held to assess their need for protection from persecution, torture, and other abuse in their home country. He says they were not granted legal assistance.
Those expelled have often already survived a range of other serious human rights violations and abuses in Libya at the hands of both state and non-state actors, including arbitrary detention, enforced disappearance, trafficking, sexual violence, torture, and ill treatment.
Colville says other migrants from Sudan, Eritrea, Somalia, and Chad, including children and pregnant women, also have been detained in recent months. He says they either already have been expelled or are at imminent risk of deportation.
Now of immediate concern is the group of 24 Eritreans who are currently being held in the same Ganfuda detention center and who are believed also to be at risk of imminent deportation. On the 3rd of December, we were informed that in a pattern of mirroring the experience of the expelled Sudanese, they had been transferred to the Al-Kufr Detention Center in preparation for their deportation.
The UN High Commissioner's Office is calling on the authorities to protect the rights of all asylum seekers and migrants in Libya. It says they should investigate all claims of violations and abuse and bring perpetrators to justice in fair trials. It urges Libya to meet its obligations under international human rights law, which prohibits collective expulsions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, December 13. Kenya celebrated its 58th Jamhuri Day yesterday, December 12, to remember the day in 1964 when Kenya gained independence from British colonial rule. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta used the occasion to defend his intention to revive the Building Bridges Initiative, despite a court ruling nullifying the initiative for not following constitutional procedures. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, President Kenyatta said Kenya cannot survive on what he described as ethnic exclusion.
Jamhuri Day is a national holiday in Kenya celebrated on 12th of December each year. Jamhuri is a Swahili word to mean republic, and the holiday is meant to officially mark the date when Kenya became a republic on 12th of December 1964. And yesterday, Sunday, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta led Kenyans in celebrating the colorful event held in Nairobi, as this will be his last Jamhuri Day celebration as president before his term ends in August 2022. Kenyatta said that Jamhuri Day is a win for the country.
The joy of December 12th is that we celebrate two critical milestones of our independence journey. And I say so because the transfer of power from the British to our founding fathers took place in three steps over a period of 18 months. The first step was achieved after the May 27th election of 1963. This election ushered in our self-rule on June the 1st of 1963, and with this step, Mzee Jomo Kenyatta became the head of government.
Despite President Kenyatta's deputy William Ruto blaming Building Bridges Initiative for the failure of the administration, President Kenyatta said that the initiative was a process that would have made Kenya more cohesive, equal, and progressive nation. Kenyatta maintained that the initiative that came after the divisive 2017 general elections meant well for the country, even though it was annulled by the courts.
I will continue to say that we need to come together and mend the crack on the wall of our nation, and this, I believe, is what necessitated the First Amendment to our Constitution. And although it encountered some legal obstacles, I say again today that BBI is just a dream deferred. One day it will happen. Because just as the country cannot survive ethnic majoritarianism and exclusion, just in the same breath, it cannot survive unfair and skewed representation.
On the other hand, Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto said that such celebrations should guarantee Kenyans a free society.
This celebration gives us as a nation, with the determination, build and secure institutions of governance, social, economic, and political institutions that will secure our current and our present, and also guarantee our future as a democratic and free society.
Former Prime Minister Raila Odinga lauded President Kenyatta's legacy.
Your Excellency, what you've done here is great. I'd ask you when you went to Namibia to go and look at what they have done. When you came back, you told me we'll do better. We'll actually come up with the best in Africa. Many of Kenyan patriots have worked here. Historians, geologists. It shows your vision for this nation, for the work that you've done that will only be recognized many years after you've left office.
The president presented state commendations to several Kenyans for outstanding service to the nation. World record holders athletes Faith Kipyegon and Peres Chepchirchir were awarded the Order of the Grand Warrior of Kenya. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The new deputy special representative in the UN mission in South Sudan, also known as AMES, and resident coordinator in South Sudan, says she hopes her appointment will inspire young African women and girls with regards to their own progress. Sarah Best-Loyanti of Liberia succeeds Alain Nudehu of Benin. She is a 20-year veteran in international development and humanitarian affairs, including in conflict and post-conflict settings. Until her South Sudan appointment, Best-Loyanti served as resident coordinator in Nepal. She hopes her appointment can inspire young African girls and women that they too can be promoted to positions which in the past have been seen or viewed as male-dominated.
If I were to succinctly indicate what this means to me, I would say it means that my granddaughters and the granddaughters of those who are in my age bracket right now in Liberia or in any country in Africa can have hope in relation to the progression of African women and can believe in the fact that African women with talent can be promoted through systems which are viewed as patriarchal, which have been viewed in the past as not being progressive, but the Secretary General of the United Nations has been very clear about gender equality. He's been extremely articulate about his intent to ensure that the UN resembles the countries that make up its membership. And for me, I believe that this provides much hope for young girls.
I want to come back to that topic you talk about women and representation. But let me ask first, you deputy special representative in the UN mission in South Sudan. Now, your appointment comes as implementation of South Sudan's 2018 revitalized peace agreement appears to be almost at a standstill. Can we say your appointment comes at an opportune time or a challenging time in South Sudan?
We can say neither. We cannot say anything in relation to my appointment and its timing in relation to situations in South Sudan because I have not taken up the post in South Sudan. And until I join South Sudan, I can't speak to the issues there.
Earlier this year, you were one of the moderators of the Global Forum on Women Leadership. Let's talk about women participation for Africa. The data provided this year by the Interparliamentary Union, I think it was in February, has Rwanda leading all of Africa with 61% female participation in parliament. Much of Africa is still far below the goal of at least 50% women participation. What do you think the UN can do to raise this number?
I think for the side of the UN continues to advocate with governments, with countries, in terms of policies, in terms of systems, to ensure gender equality, for us to work towards it. But this really the responsibility of the people of each of the countries. It's the responsibility of the governments of each of the countries. When you go to the poll to vote, you need to think about who you're voting for and what that means for you in terms of your rights being fulfilled and who can best fulfill your rights. And I think educating people on the role of women and the importance of women having a say in the development of their countries and their communities is very important. But ultimately, it's not only about elected positions, it's about appointed positions as well. And so heads of state need to be committed to the statements that they make, the commitments they make in relation to gender equality.
Ambassador Beslo Nyanti, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us. Very nice.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bote. Really glad to speak with you.
Sarah Beslo Nyanti is the new Deputy Special Representative in the UN Mission in South Sudan and Resident Coordinator in South Sudan. She was speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the news that the Nigerian Football Federation has terminated the contract of Super Eagles coach Gernot Rohr and appointed Ix International Augustine Iguavoen, currently its technical director, as the technical advisor on an interim basis. A statement by the NFF on Sunday said the decision to terminate the relationship with the Franco-German was reached after a virtual meeting of the NFF executive committee. I spoke to some sports journalists on what they make of this move by the NFF to sack Gernot Rohr barely 3 weeks before the commencement of AFCON 2021 in Cameroon.
Samson, I think the Nigeria Football Federation has taken the right decision. As a matter of fact, this decision should have been taken earlier than now. It's long overdue. The fact remains that the Super Eagles has no direction. They have no style, and they have no sense of purpose. Nobody can tell you the kind of identity that the Nigerian national team has.
The Nations Cup is some weeks away. If you knew that you have it in mind to relieve Gernot Rohr of his appointment, I don't see the sense in not making a proper plan on the other hand.
I don't see what impact Iguavoen will make. I don't even believe in his technical competence. I think that this action is quite unnecessary given the timing. It's too little too late as far as I'm concerned.
Cameroon coach Antonio Conceicao has named a provisional squad for next month's Total African Cup of Nations Cameroon 2021. Conceicao released the 40-man list on Friday, officially launching the indomitable Lions' quest for his sixth crown on home soil. Elsewhere, Gabon's coach Tom Sinfeld announced his provisional 40-man squad to begin preparations towards next month's African Cup of Nations Cameroon 2021. The Belgian will trim his squad to 28 players before the start of the tournament on the 9th of January 2022 in Cameroon. Staying with football news, Congo Football Association, FECOFOOT, has withdrawn their national team from FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup qualifiers. After Nigeria's 4-0 victory against Congo in Brazzaville, the return leg was scheduled for the 17th of December 2021 in Lagos. In a correspondence to CAF, FECOFOOT expressed the inability of Congo to take part in the next match due to travel challenges. Therefore, the match is cancelled and Nigeria automatically qualified for the next round. The president of Liberia, George Weah, has expressed great excitement over the news of the victory of football legend Samuel Eto'o, who won a keenly contested election to become the president of the Cameroon Football Federation at the weekend. The Liberian president expressed hope that Eto'o's vast knowledge of the game will be used to effect change in the way football is run in Cameroon and Africa as a whole. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, December 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Batty in Washington wishing you will have a great week.